I'm really excited about today. I was thinking back this morning about how long I've known Joe and Dan, and I realized that the first time I met Joe Torre was at a reading when I was 19, maybe? So half of my life. He was reading with Sam Cornish. He was a professor of mine at Emerson. And since then, he's been a really important part of my life as a friend and as a writer, and one of the more encouraging people in my life. So I'm really excited. And Dan has been, we met Dan just soon thereafter. I must have been about 20 or so. And Dan has always been a generous and steady member of Boston's poetry scene. His writing combines the natural and the human and is very careful and lovely. And I'm sort of sentimental up here because the two of them mean so much to me, and I'm very happy to have them here. So we're going to read, Joe is going to read first, and then Dan, and then they have books for sale in the back, and I hope you enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you. So I'm going to talk for just a couple of minutes because my mic right now, and I knew there'd be mostly friends here today, and I just wanted to talk a little bit to that, because after I left college a long time ago, I'd met a couple of real writers in school, but when I got out, the first real writer I ever looked up was Vincent Farini, and I came through the door, and I saw this man who was probably at least old enough to be my dad or older, working class, Italian-American, didn't give a fuck for certain things that I didn't give a fuck about in poetry, and he was just in living color, and I just knew then, like I want to be like that when I'm that age. That's amazing. You're not like any of my uncles or anybody I know in my family. Pardon me?
Where did you go to school?
UMass Boston.
Yay!
And so, but the interesting thing is, Vincent really, I always say that Word of Mouth, the great reading series that Michael curated, is where my writing life began once I finished school. And but it was really Vincent that led me there, because when Robert Duncan died, Vincent had said, well, we're going to go to this, let's go to this memorial at Word of Mouth, which I'd heard about, and I first went down there with Vincent and Linda Crane. And I remember just walking down and meeting. So, and that's when I met everybody. Vincent introduced me to people. Met Garrett that day, and Bill, and Carol Weston, and just my life never changed. So I think what I'm trying to say is that as I'm getting older, realizing that poetry, for me, is as much about friendship as it is about all the other things that poetry is about. And it's not just about my friends who are here now, but the ones who can't be here today for whatever reason, and we all have our great excuses, because I have a whole list of them. Sorry I didn't make your reading. It's great when you have kids, because they can always be sick. But I'm really nervous today. But it's also about the friends you don't know or you didn't know, other poets who you weren't here in that time and being bodily way, but you knew them, or poets who were your friends from across oceans and times. It's all that way, I think. I learned it from many poets, and certainly Spicer's after Lorca. And that's, as I start to think about my work and what I've been doing, if anything worthy in poetry, I'm seeing, I hope I'm going to present something tonight that might make some sense for you as it's making sense for me now. Thanks for coming. This is a poem from my friend Lee Ho. It's called Sky Dream. A moon's old rabbit and cold toad, weeping colors of sky. Lucent walls slant across through half-open cloud towers. A jade-pure wheel squeezes dew into bulbs of wet light. Phoenix waste jewels meet on cinnamon-scented paths. Transformations of a thousand years gallop by like horses. Yellow dust, soon seawater, below changeless island peaks. And all China, seen so far off, it's just nine wisps of mist. In the ocean's vast clarity, a mere cup of spilled water. And, Harvest Moon poem to Mei Yao Chen. Clouds cover the moon. Reading your poems, then your friend Ouyang Xu's reading the poems of an absent friend. Train crossing the Longfellow Bridge after dinner with Bill, Beverly, dogs. Good drink, food, conversation. Gold State House Dome, John Wiener's, Stephen Jonas dead. His letters litter my studio floor. Joe Dunn dead, your wife and children dead, you drunk and ill. Ed's new poem, Shooting into the Tunnel. The joys of poetry for those who appreciate them increase with time and familiarity. Yes, Jonas's hateful words attack and overwhelm me too, but his brisk walk to pavilion of good crops and peace and the hard-on hills get a blowjob from the east can't be beat. Most poets in ancient China pretended to be poor. That young woman across from me, how can she sleep? Is she pretending? The brandy and rocking car lull me into the feeble swarm of my own thoughts. Nothing dots, spotting and clotting, sticky pudding. My wife and daughters home asleep. My aging mother asleep on the North Shore never reads my poems. Couldn't you get a job at a newspaper? Dead poets are not dead. They speak candle-lit words to each other, plotting to set fires. Guarded against words, words guard them. In the newspaper, the score 9-0. Who's on? Who's off? She wakes at her stop. Summer is no longer new. Ed's words in waves. When you do not use a well every day, the pure water doesn't replace itself. Dear May, who says the dead do not think of us? The lights lost momentarily flash on. Doors slide open, up the escalator under dim lamps. The girl who sells flowers has closed shop. Step outside beneath harvest moon drizzle. On a rainy autumn day, in an old Dodge Dart, Joe Dunn, Stephen Jonas, and I drive cross-country to visit Jack Spicer. Made it far as Lowell when the Dodge died. I'll take a drink for this one. Hangover. What use swearing off it? I won't keep my word. My hands shake, my head aches, my stomach turned. My daughters bang drums. Is this responsible of me? My brain fried? No more heavy drinking when I visit friends. Who can follow the immortal Tijon? Get drunk and die. Tijon's Jack Kerouac. Family used to call him Little Jack. Prose poem. One afternoon, Mei Yao Chen and I celebrated the pleasure of the season's first warm day with a visit to Garrett Lansing on Cape Ann. It so happened at that moment of our arrival, Garrett was readying for a walk in Ravenswood, so we packed snacks, drink, rolled hemp, and set out from Garrett's garden. Trees were still bare and budless. The ground, mud gray, flattened, reeked of compost as the sun shone brilliant light down through the skeleton forest. We walked the Magnolia Swamp Trail, which was underwater from the heavy winter snow and spring rains. The catwalk barely topped the waterline as we made our way. Later, we climbed a moraine and at the top looked east to Gloucester Harbor, gleaming blue-green speckles in the distance. There atop the moraine, under the sun, we smoked, drank, ate, and talked of the way, chaos, Penku, magic, and poetry. I was unable to keep up with the discussion between Garrett and May. Their mutual erudition and interests left me lost and scratching my head. So in the middle of a debate on the political and spiritual implications of the elegies of Chu, I wandered away from my companions to explore alone. An onshore breeze aired salt, and I sat at the edge of the moraine staring at the ocean, when suddenly I heard banging and saw the Taoist immortal Chang Ku Lao riding a white donkey across the sky. He wore a feather robe and beat a fish drum, and when he saw me, he stopped and asked, "Did you enjoy your outing to Dragon Gate?" I asked him how he knew I'd been to Dragon Gate, but he didn't answer. I called to my friends to come quickly, but when I turned around, Chang Ku Lao had disappeared. In Garrett Lansing's cabin alone at night, where I'll be tonight. So don't come knocking. I open the window. A salty breeze floods the small room. Fishermen and water birds dream the same dream. A big fish splashes out in the harbor. Late, men and creatures forget each other. Tide creeps over the flats. In bed, alone, I abuse myself. Foghorn, water, slapping hulls. This is for Jimmy, because you're going to take me, because I haven't been there yet, but when you're a poet, you can write whatever you want. John Wiener's grave. In Milton, under new grass, bones rolled out to a heaven, you astonish with your verse as you shake us on earth. God knows poets have no luck, but few, John, had so bad a time as you. I've been writing this long work of these short little pieces, so I'm going to read some selections from that work, and it's called Scripted Clouds, City Blocks. Dozen daycare kids, wrists tied, a rope led across the street. Old woman, pink hat, white dress, cardboard box. Condo conversion, every vacant inch of city, gut 'em out, mark 'em up. The egg came first, created regions of the world. Panku's head became four mountains, fatty tissues, rivers, and oceans, eyes, sun, and moon, hair, grasses, and trees, voice, thunder. In 1843, a surveyor plots first choice section of Spring Hill. Whatever happened to my neighbor who, in the middle of the night, at her husband screamed, "Get the fuck out! I hate your fucking guts!" Eminent domain, they call it, and with it, a subway stop. New high-rises, thick-cut chops. Prospect Hill, Grand Union, first flag raised against British. Cattle grazed the great pasture. Children play, and tulips. Two men, jackhammers, arms pumping, coat hoods over hard hats, break through asphalt to frozen ground. Pink dragon, tails of wisp, evaporates upper levels, outer breath. A hawk, a worm, a mouse, a thing among things, our messy little house. Who reads cloud script traverses the nine city blocks. You don't need an immortal riding a white donkey down Somerville Ave, but it helps. Snow's black. Cars splash as they pass. Walk without touching the ground is hard. That way, shadow falls. Wind something yesterday. Creaky old pine, so many deities. In this park, in broad daylight, he raised wind, summoned rain, puffed smoke, and spat mist until subdued. Fan Quan was a Chinese landscape painter, you may know or not know, but scrapyards going the way of dinosaurs. Fan Quan, come down from your mountains. Paint our scrap metal hills. The drumlin bore a spring between Lowell and Cedar near summer. Wake to birds and dogs, herds of form, hoof along. Foot to foot. Clouds ground into powder and eaten help build strong men wearing women's old clothes, wandering, drunk, carrying flowers, only to disappear. Okay, ticket day. Move the car. White heron atop red tree. Lay my head on a cloud. Nana Pashamet, killed in a raid. His widow deeded this land. 21 coats, 19 fathom of wampum, and 3 bushels of corn. Like, what the fuck's a fathom of wampum? We'll give you a fathom of wampum. Tenant in the illegal basement apartment next door stands in front, phone to his ear. Cars stop by just to say hi. 17th and 18th centuries, Somerville Ave, then Milk Row, a trade route. Asylum Avenue, Glass House Court, Jenny Lind Avenue, Tube Works Court, Tiger Court, lost street names. Assembly Square, where Uncle Vinny assembled Etzel's, New Legoland. Last night, rain, thunder, Now this, son, instantly. Many whiskeys, late night, traffic's light, windows dark, stepping side to side up Highland Ave. The zigzag home. Governor Winthrop gets a road, who owned his own people. Charge with leg nearly severed, straight into enemy fire, then die? They'll name a sports field after you. Follow Oxford, Trull Lane, Berkeley, central to Highland. Rows of houses, brick apartments, glassy storefronts, city hall, high school, public libraries, cars one end to other, telephone poles, street lamps, and down, beneath it all, same old earth, wandering away. In 1630, Indian trader John Woolrich, first white to cross the neck and settle. She flies to a star, burrows underground, sings charms, charges stone and skateboards in traffic. Polly Swamp, covered by small trees and thick bushes, thought haunted, then crammed houses in. Traffic stacks along the Mystic, downriver, cut off by 93. 10 hills, double-deckers, cluster neat street rows. Snow melt off. Bodies writhe and coil in water, rushing down street to sea. And I'm just going to finish up with a few snippets from Time Being. And thanks, y'all, for listening and being a great audience. Where's Amanda? Oh. Dear Amanda, I get the feeling your book may never end. In the old days, this was known as cutting weeds, planting trees. Dear Dow, even you are a liar, and I spit in your face twice. It was October, a bright, wispy day, as I walked slowly up the stairs to think about dinner. Would I, could I, should I be a gentleman skilled in the business of life? The bird outside my window mocks me. Do you think there's anything to the dreaming of the sleeper tale on sale? Neil says children suck. How can you hate children? But Neil does. He hates everything, and moving away to live on an island, you'll be less to hate. Dear Frank, every time I try to leave a message, your voice box is full. You spend your weeks at flute conventions in Kansas. You eat fatty foods and drink too much. You stroke it like 17. You take painful shits. Your hemorrhoids swell and burn. You bleed. You cry. You son of Megara. You can suddenly learn to knit. Birds make the most of brown sunflowers, sliver, and gold slivers and antique buttons. I love you, mother, crying, trying to keep up, too many things to do. I can't remember the last time I washed the bed, sheets, the house is cold where layers leak in potato soup. Hey, little girl, you don't have to hide nothing no more. I can't even mop the kitchen floor. Layers of dirt, dust, spilled food and drink walked over, stepped on abstract charcoal on wood grain. Dear everybody, after New Year's, I will not attend readings until further notice. Please don't take it personally. I have nothing left to give. Dear Jim Burley, kill, kill, kill those who advertise the poem out. May they be forced to work the fields for a piece of bread a day. The Siamese amphibious creatures tears at its head with long, sharp teeth. Until one head finally falls off, he throws it in the water. The human body is the image of the conflict between two states. The entire natural world consists of a network of secret correspondences. Celeste tries to teach her how to play. Sorry, Nana, you're doing it wrong. Dear novel, you cannot contain me. Go fuck yourself. My mother phones. Did Molly get the check I sent her for her birthday? No. Well, I sent it a week ago. Maybe you put the wrong address. No, I didn't. I have your address. Why would I put the wrong address? The chocolate mocha cake for Molly's birthday. Bottle of white French burgundy. Molly makes a crown for Celeste's queen costume. Julia models her Black Death costume. Two pumpkins to carve, then trick-or-treat down the street en route home from playing music in Groton. Cheesy yellow moon plays peekaboo with clouds against black and blue night sky above Acton and Concord. Along Route 2, big deer, bright eyes by the side of the road, and two big bucks my neighbor slays with his bow, each with bloody holes where the arrow pierced flesh. You can survey your entire life looking into such holes. The alphabets of all languages reveal traces of ancient characters. They beat the boy senseless over neighborhood turf, but one of the beaters has a conscience and a sense of moral responsibility, aware that there is a world beyond neighborhood and words in which the dead appear in the forms of animals. If you could swallow your tail, you could pass the time rather than waste it. Oh, earthly figures, clouds, and musical notes. The PTA does not have enough money for all the field trips. Parents are urged to donate what they can. If you cannot donate, please donate your time. It's not that I'm an elitist, she says. I just want my kids to have every advantage possible. This must be some kind of dream, I tell myself. Wake up. But my mother and I, stranded on a high, rugged terrain, try to find safe way down. All avenues of descent too steep for her. You go, Joe. I'll stay here. Finally, wake. Body shakes, unable to fall back to sleep. 5:30, rise, make coffee and Molly's lunch. Get breakfast ready for the girls. Julia scrapes season's first frost off windshield. Central Street traffic backed up from Highland to Broadway. Drop girls at school, order Thanksgiving turkey. Amanda writes broken water main. No dishes, no baths. Brown water leaves ring and sink. Bodies and trinkets, faces that look the same, delirious after hours in one room. Say you are sorry, hearing I am sorry and being sorry the way makeup cakes at the edge of a bullet hole. Tonight the moon is a yellow shock above the Brazilian church on School Street. Dear Joe, wisdom says that when one needs nurturing, one can find nurturing in nurturing. Dear wisdom fart, the wisdom that can be named is not the true wisdom. One day I climbed a hill overlooking Interstate 93, drank wine, played music until some young thugs appeared sizing me up. One of them asked, did I have any money? Before I could answer, a stray kite flew above us and dropped a moldy rat, which hit that boy in the head, and they reeled and scattered. Julie eats clam chowder for breakfast, Celeste cereal, 6 whole wheat fig Newtons, for me, a cup strong coffee. He told me to use the things of the world to cultivate Tao. I walk, being careful of the cobblestones beneath my noticeably artificial feet, me with unspeakable fashion faux pas. I totally heard you. You don't like me. There's nothing I can do about it. I am not such a caricature, pussy footing along, wearing sunglasses. Heck of a tail anyways. I called him. He never called back. Jack, be oldie. Jack, be goldie. Jack, come round on the merry-go. Hold me. Thank you.
Thank you, Amanda and the Gloucester Writers' Center, for having me. I think I've only read once in Gloucester before. That was about 15 years ago at a youth center that was on...
ArtSpace.
ArtSpace. It was ArtSpace, yeah, with fantastic maps that I took home that I guess the kids had made there. So I'm glad to be back reading in Gloucester, especially amongst so many people I know and admire. When I first started coming to Gloucester, I imagined that it was the land of Olson because I loved his work, but I've come to realize that it's the land of Garrett Lansing. So glad to have Garrett here too. So I will start reading a couple of poems for our younger audience absorbed in their books, which when you think about it is a really great idea. If you were all absorbed in your books, it'd be so much easier for me. And I would just read above you or behind you or something. But these are a couple of poems from an ongoing manuscript that'll just last for a long time, I think, that I'm calling Kinder Poems, which just, you know, because the kids find their way into all of the work that I do, I think, so I made it a separate ongoing manuscript. This is called The Luck of the Yankee Alligator. I will sing you a song of the Yankee alligator, but I can't think of words to rhyme with alligator. And I can't put that thing beside my refrigerator, so I have to let him go. See you later. In the fall of 2010, on a fallen tree in Boston, a hapless alligator was seen dozing in the sun. Only 4 feet long and drowsy from the chilly air, the alligator was caught by a scientist whose hands were bare. Meanwhile, a Massachusetts woman won a lottery to hunt an alligator in South Carolina. At 13 feet and a half and half a ton, the southern alligator was hard to catch. Shot, stabbed, his spinal cord severed, behold the mighty hunter. The Boston alligator was warmed and pressed into service to tour the country with an educational outfit. What a fascinating word, alligator. One goes to the taxidermist and one to the mobile zoo. Spider drop. We dropped the spider outside the bathroom window and did not worry if it wished to go. We thought we knew better than the spider and the instinct or urge that led it inside. We did not want the spider to walk on our toothbrush or share water from our little plastic cup. But how easy it is to help you brush your teeth when you track a spider on the ceiling, looking up. We did not wonder if the spider had a mother, like the offspring of Charlotte after she died, or if the spider was alone or came in with another who would miss her friend and not know she's outside. We figured there is no food in here for a spider, unless a spider would lap at a bar of soap. And one way or another, the spider was going, and we hope she went down easy on her own spider rope. That concludes the children's portion of the reading.
Break out the swears.
I think we've had enough of that, Mr. Tora. This is called...
That was a clean reading. Sharon said there'd be kids.
Poem ending as an oily blot. Window light in the days that follow surrender pacifies the victory-drunk mob all over Philadelphia. 1781... One cannot read, nor work, nor give attention, nor imagine this house with illumination. When glass begins breaking, run into the yard. The poem must begin somewhere. Oil is the pressed or squeezed viscous substance that enables a process and leaves a blot or stain on understanding, a spot under the engine where the vehicle is parked. A neighbor is sorry for furniture, not for windows, not for swiped sugar, nor the pickle barrels strewn about the streets. Tuned into an unknown tongue on the subway, it's nice to know people travel. Look out the tunnel. Dark ends and daylight strikes the window crossing the bridge. The new sidewalk dried before kids could write their names or make any impression, but then leaves fell and the rain left their leached stains in outline there for months. Slabs poured and squared to the wall, level with the smooth-cut granite curb. Why this fascination with margins? Paves the way for what? A walk and a remarkable diversity of plants, animals, and other organisms through natural metabolic processes. We held a street meeting, the corner of 15th and Buttonwood, and when I spoke, I was arrested, lodged in jail under the statue of William Penn, 1913. It was a great event when a speaker came. They wanted to see you as much as possible. They heard about other parts of the country, while the speaker could learn all about conditions in that area. A poem refers to an overall mixture of chemicals, from fossilized organic materials, such as zooplankton and algae, to animal fat, lard, and others, or plant oils from the olive, maize, sunflower, and many other species. Some burn in liquid or aerosol form, generating light and heat, which can be used directly or stored in the Philadelphia tank farm. The Whale of Melville, Upton Sinclair's oil, the Society's Shifting Discovery in Muniff's Cities of Salt, regimes of lubrication crudely refined into wide varieties of component hydrocarbons. Where is the heat, light, and oxygen in poetry? Where are the egg yolks of poetry? 1994, experience reading a poem is generally a reliable guide, although outcomes of empirical tests are sensitive to the qualities of particular samples. What is the smoke point of the poem? All are sensitive, whether refined or not, to heat, light, and exposure to oxygen. Globules of ink drop on the paper, making a blot. Appears first as a blot upon a book that creates or corrects, disfigures or enhances a surface. Then as a basis for imaginary scapes, the relation of shapes made upon paper as they drop or drip, there appears a discernible form. For keeps. The hulking brick armories, castellated, thick, crenellated, were built to protect cities from wrench-wielding literate citizens who torqued an argument into an eight-hour day and absorbed the heat in broad and popular movements. The gathering of art into one made the year 1913 immortal, an arsenal of work made mostly without wrenches, when paint splashed across new markets for armaments. Camouflage was pressed into the linguistic magazine of the unrolling century. All ancient history, this untethered talk, shoelace turned to lash, soul projectile, airborne above heads of the press corps, the body gathered in a windowless room to occlude dust and remain unseen from the scuffed banks where actual bodies lie, somewhere below the webcam mount, the bright night the war began again. Organizers said the daffodils numbered 10,000. Police estimated only a couple hundred. The new drones are disguised as daffodils. The perimeter. Fist-sized bulbs in patterns and pairs, extinguished in darkness on mobile frames. A cluster of dumpsters on the perimeter of gravel berms and pines. Travelers in the diner sit on bright plastic beside a hearth for hire. Duke Ellington's childhood piano teacher, Mrs. Clinkscales. Traffic speeds past the rain-streaked windows. Deer cross the road like frontier bandits, quickly through the parking lot to be hit by rushing lights. Small paper envelopes of salt from Savannah. Ketchup packs tear open a tablespoon to season fried diced potatoes. I bet the drivers feel bad, mowed down near a junction. I bet the drivers feel bad, though their lives too are at risk. A carcass is visible under big highway lights. Clifford Brown killed on the Pennsylvania Turnpike. Diego Rivera was wowed by highways on his way to meet Henry Ford. The romance of exit ramps and the estate of dented chrome is the aspiration of those on the move, and the aspersion those echoes compel. You roll down the window as you breeze by the fields and hold your arm or hand out. Lee Morgan was shot between sets by an ex at Slug's Saloon. A bigger picture noticed, but not observed. A folded road map surrounded by coupons for tires and chicken fried steak. Standing at the fuel pump, the snow feels like cake mix, powdery and moist. These are the roads on television criminals get chased down for drugs and violence. Arrivals. A sunlight strip on yellow brick of the power plant smokestack, blinking lights bright as a welder's torch, visible for many miles. The medical helicopter is secular humanist, presumably unarmed. between buildings, traffic streams along the overpass. I may be a spy, eyeing periodicals by the airport kiosk, appearing guileless, waiting, my bags packed on the return flight with books I could not read. Poets are the spies of island republics. No, poets are in fantasy service to utopian monarchies governed by philosopher queens. The public address system seldom threatens sovereign literates with denial of boarding. Three Chinook helicopters flew low over the city to the ballpark, I guess. They were cheered, applauded. Between the third and fourth inning, another war started, faster than the last, more secret than the last. I know it wasn't cheered, but then again, once these things get started, I guess they are applauded. Callens. The 615 bears down, echoes through a shallow valley of stacked granite. The rails separate cities and canopies. Mattresses and ovens and decayed cardboard line the tracks, and broken keyboards, and big broken branches that somehow also appear to be trash, and wires and appliances that come to be slid down the gentle slope below thin, tough, link-choked ailanthus. Bumblebees careen across Summer Street, drunken diplomats on spending sprees. A line of oaks along sidewalk and street, right now peaked when the sun strikes, like mixing bright paint. A thousand blackbirds cavort among the trees, wheel and chase, oscillate like little jets, the trees like giant gourds and blackbirds like shaken pepper. Hillsides alight with a winnowing glow, and actual jets angling sluggishly, speeding toward prairies, to come down by the sea sometime tonight, and in the interval my head rests happily on the sheets. In the parking lot's muddy water, blackbirds bathe. Not a blackbird to be seen when three hawks glide over, sharks cruising the ocean surface. The sight, sighted, becomes crumbled, pushed aside by winter weight, and lost from sight for a while. The mockingbird of things, the blue jay of ideas, one faces down dread authorities with a single memoir full of humor and invented tales. Tomorrow? No, there is no morrow, but an interim bewildered by holidays of the epoch's most popular religions. Those late travelers are going, after a beverage, to sleep, going under beside the jet engine roar as passengers in a steel hull once slept to engines. In the walk, I ache for the kitchen light, beaming wattage around the corner. I may have seen this place once in a children's book. I may then, having made it part of a cognitive framework, seen this place more than once as a landscape unusually torpid. It may be what struggles against the violent visions of swank cinematographers and the rank sensibilities of those who choose soundtracks for a living. Time to empty the pool. The rocks set down in the garden, and the red sorrel that finds its way to unfold in sunlight, its candy-shaped blossom, and the water that flattens the grass and floods all the bugs in its path down to the thirsty hostas, and the things that fly out from that wrath on tough little wings that look brittle, and the big colored towel of dyed cotton with giant faces of cartoons, and the frayed nylon of fold-up chairs riveted to hollow aluminum frames, and the clouds drifting against blue, and the twisting shapes of shade where secretive squirrels and birds ply their gathering trade, and the beds of zucchini and basil whose leaves droop in the heat, and the territorial spiders and the occasional passing motors humming over the hot road, and your soaked lashes and dripping head, and your grass and dirt-covered feet slipping into flip-flops, and the stories we read under the lamp, and the insects hitting the window pane. I have a John Wiener's poem, too. And I this is a combination of seeing him a few times, and most of the people who were there are some of you are probably here. This is called John Wiener's in the Year 2K. Lucid, for him. Reading poems. Talkative. Fumbling with paper scraps and reading them. It's taken me 50 years, he said, to learn I cannot write poetry. The party, in his honor, he sat beside his cousin and nephew. At the lectern, silent, thumbing pages, gray black hair, slicked back, unshaven, his jowls appear heavier than they are, pinstripe sleeves rolled to elbows. Through the window behind him, new tiles and copper glimmer on the memorial tower. And the dumpster outside, a gutted church, the faithful, gone. But its shell remains. It shall remain. It's taken me 50 years, he said, to learn I cannot write poetry. The lined nest. To see him then hovering and singing, or hovering together, billing and singing, I see that all establish their lives on that basis, when many favorite plants have gone to seed. Live, keep comfortably warm. The best of feeling seems to pervade the company. As to live a life of independence, magnanimity, and trust, food seems more important. They make shift to live merely by the walls and bottom, firm and so compact, tight enough to hold water. We know not what it is to live in the open air. Our lives are domestic, gray birch, alder, thistle in more senses than we think, evening primrose, ragweed, and dandelion. We might possibly live in a cave, spending the best part of one's life supplied with ripe cones, seeds of pitch pine, earning to enjoy questionable liberty, ragweed and seeds of catmint. Make a fortune first of sycamore and sweet gum. Unbelievers question, as can live on vegetable food. There is a certain class of wild aster who asks such questions, and certain grasses as winter food. I can live on board nails, a tangle of chicken wire, rusty bent nails, double-pointed tacks. A home, place of warmth, elevated far above. One moves out of the way, but one does not leave. The result? Slow combustion. Disease and death take place. Some defect. The fire goes out. No place for a work of fine art. No proper pedestal for it. A stove, a bed, and a place to sit. Remove aluminum bands from the foot. Strong, noisy, and boisterous, more numerous and more noisy as summer approaches, sit up as late as you please, steal in without attracting attention. Whenever you got up, go abroad with little noise, constantly milling around, grating the whole surface of the planet. Line its nest with waste paper, shanties which everywhere border railroads. At the least alarm, begin to shout. Of pure joy making noise, the birds keep just above the treetops, and seldom is there much fuss against the trunk of a giant white pine. Hard to live, by faith, gasping for breath, determined not to live by experience, overlooking an open meadow. What mean and sneaking lives! Furnishes nothing to make bones. Their eyes are keen, and they raise their heads. The Untitled Sun. Things we neglect to take for granted blaze by new light in old places. We think of sun warming things and morning cold. We think of sun as a competent agent, venerable and furiously indifferent. No wonder it has been worshipped, though we tend to render it with smiles and dark glasses. Seeds pushed into soil came up after a week to peer out the window. Whatever I can plant, I plant where I find room, and in this room where many, with many windows, plastic buckets hold, whole nurseries of squash, tomatoes, and beans. Friendly plant raiser, withering in its advocacy. A thing to see but never look at must be worship worthy. What the water must feel like, maybe a burning sensation like stripping away protection of self, an internal process, an expulsion of self breaks out into growth. A seed wedged under thumbnail, the germination process, not the chemical reaction, but seeing the seedling lift up the soil crust, cursed to conclude we truly are stewards of these palmfuls of farm. This is called Things John Clare Loves, an essay, and it has citations from John Clare's poems, sometimes couplets. Each one begins, I love. Some animal, some bird, some bug in its flight or evasive dailiness is the antagonist of our attention as we are simply too busy, as we are simply making our way. I love to rustle through the sedge, but the rain comes and alters the course of an afternoon, and the contrails of passenger planes disappear under the modified sky. Its engine sound fades away. The flicker comes again and hammers at the chimney cap. Nothing quite says I'm back from winter like that steel reverberation at dawn. I love the fitful gust that shakes the casement all the day. Some squirrel or cardinal or beetle is making headway in its quest for nourishment or mating. Not so far from the highway, but for the hushed leaves on a breezeless day, its sibilant shushes barely caught by the ear. At what point, at what distance can one hear the ocean this way? I love to walk the fields, and the dashboard lights at night, like harbor lights within. The crunch of dried leaves on sidewalks at Halloween, what if all were the thinnest glass underfoot? I love to see the cottage smoke curl upwards through the trees. At dawn, I drive through the city. Its deserted streets evoke familiarity and alienation. This snapping turtle, tiny carcass I mistook for a plastic toy. I love to see the shaking twig dance till the shut of eve. The bike path is shielded from sunlight by miles of bordering trees, and the occasional granite post betrays more than the flawless grade, the railroad that once steamed through here. I love the muse, who sits her down upon the molehill's little lap, stepping off the bus at day's end into the dark, and the dark deeper each morning when getting on. Where will the blue lighten to see the cloud ripples, pink and tender as a lobster tail, a little further along each day until altogether mist and sun become a weekend activity or work break? How frantically kids start jumping up and down, waving at a bus, pulling away while they are waiting for another bus. I love to see the old heath's withered break. I love thee rude and boisterous as thou art, and the song plugged directly into my ears is older than me, and the voice passed long ago. Tonight the rain glistens on the black asphalt, and the metal fences, and the silver posts of the streetlights. The emanating yellow light of houses is the century's iconic hearth, bespeaking warmth and centeredness. It makes possible these midnight lines. My life as a stand-up poet. I take the lane less traveled each time I go, and each time I go I get a little lost, looking in books for instruction, never stopping to ask directions. I wanted to know what surrounded me, so I found a field guide to flowers, a kind of personal anthology, and I learned early that poetry makes shit happen. So I began to write, and things happened to me. All my life ought to be a movie. I could perform well from start to finish, from comforts and terrors of childhood to a transitional frame of coffee pouring into a cup, the fine yellow light in the evening over the city, the brilliance repelling the dark. This will substitute for grave, for poetry makes nothing matter. I furnish soundtrack and dialogue. I am a poet. Talk fades into the folds of napkins. Engines hum outside. Soft breathing through the baby monitor. It has been a tough double-duty day of diapers and typing. I fall onto the couch of life. I sleep. The camera pans past piles of books. A languorous music sets the mood. Not deep sleep, but a light nap before dinner, dreaming of broth. You didn't get any laughs at all. Dreaming of both. That's,
I was ruffling.
That's an Elliot riff. Dreaming of both. Generation and refrain. The tallest trees will mark the walk in the light of Sunday morning, and the roots dip under the creek bed and enjoy the force of water. And the pigeons crowd together under eaves and commit no crime, and the sparrows gather lists together, head out for groceries and hardware. So we sing this song aloud as we head over Uver Mountain. The first people to sing the song were of an older generation. I remember approaching as if on a highway, while the clouds rolled over or in or away. And I am older now than they were when the song they sang was new. How good it is to be walking today. My back feels perfectly straight, and no incline or hill can bend me against this lovely and easy breathing. So we sing this song aloud as we head over Uvra Mountain. The rhythm of the song will vary and perpetuate endless generation. And as I twist around the tight spots and heavy obstructions on the path, I look straight ahead while moving and still see all around me for miles. This rock will wear down with time, but it won't wear down before me. The shadows call me home in the twilight. The shadows move over me and I away. So we sing this song aloud as we head over Uvra Mountain, the endless generation I make my song and become part of the mountain. Thank you.